What's going on, Blue Jays fans, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Blue Jays as part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm your co-host, Lucas Suisse. Of course, I want to thank all the listeners who make Locked On Blue Jays your first listen of the day. You can find my work on Twitter at We Sports, where I'm available on Sportsnet, ESPN's The Undefeated, the Toronto Star, as well as play-by-play broadcasting for Saga 960 AM Radio. The Locked On Blue Jays podcast is free and available wherever you get your podcasts, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Stitcher.
You are Locked On Blue Jays, your daily Toronto Blue Jays podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
On today's episode, we are continuing our off-season slash lockout content. And of course, I'm pleased to be joined once again by MLB analyst Jen Smith. Jen, welcome to the podcast.
Lucas, do you know what happened on this day in 1990?
Ooh. I do not. Related. Enlighten me.
So 31 years ago today, Fred McGriff and Tony Fernandez were traded to the Padres in exchange for Roberto Alomar and Joe Carter.
Probably the best trade in Blue Jays history.
That does go down as quite the value in return, because what the Blue Jays did, obviously, with Alomar and Carter and company was absolutely epic. So I thought I would bring that to your attention in case it had not come your way so far.
Well, I appreciate the education. Of course, I was not alive back during that when that trade happened in real life, but obviously I've heard about it, and obviously it helped pave the way to Blue Jays World Series championships. And it's sort of similar in a way to what we're going to be chatting about today, because Jen, you received a question in our last mailbag that we thought we would dedicate a whole episode to, and it was related to the Blue Jays current front office.
Yes. So a listener named Matt Sweeby wrote into the mailbag and essentially asked us to evaluate how the front office has done at converting their inherited value. So the players that were on the roster at the time when they came into office, how they converted that inherited value into current value. And I thought that was a really interesting question, one that to truly answer it would require a very lengthy deep dive. So we're only going to sort of tread water on it, I think, a bit today. But I thought it was a really fascinating question, one that I really had not fully sort of sat down and looked into. So great question, Matt. And, you know, this is what we're going to discuss. This is what we're going to discuss today.
Well, just for argument's sake, let me just show you. So 2016 was obviously the year, the first season of the Shapiro-Atkins era, because, of course, Alex Anthopoulos had left after the 2015 season when they made the ALCS. Now, of course, the Jays did make the ALCS in 2016, but obviously, you know, we sort of knew that this, you know, that this core roster, like I'm just going to list some names here, like, you know, Russell Martin, Josh Donaldson, Jose Bautista, Edwin Encarnacion, Troy Tulowitzki, Devin Travis, Justin Smoke, Kevin Pillar. I mean, the pitching side, Sanchez, Happ, Stroman, Estrada, like, a lot of these guys, like, we sort of knew as Blue Jays fans weren't going to be around really, Pat, you know, not long after that season. And when Mark Shapiro came in, like, obviously the plan was very clear that a rebuild, quote unquote, was coming. And then a lot of those guys that, you know, really captured the hearts and minds of Blue Jays Nation in 2015 weren't going to be part of the future. So obviously, Jen, you know, it felt like every year thereafter, they were getting rid of a lot of those big players. I mean, Encarnacion famously did not return in 2017. You know, then of course, you know, the 2018 season comes along, and that of course, you know, it goes on from there. Josh Donaldson's not around. So it just felt like year after year after year, sort of being the climax of, you know, the quote, or like the, you know, the low point being the 2019 season when they, you know, lost 95 games. Just your overall thoughts before we take a deep dive into the sort of quote unquote moves. You know, those early Shapiro Atkins years, because given where we are now, that isn't that long of a rebuild when you really think about it.
No. No, it isn't. I mean, they inherited a tremendously talented roster that had aged. They were aging out, and it was very obvious that those players were not going to be able to play at that level. And so, you know, something had to be done. And the thing is that the Blue Jays already had their future core in place, right? Like, they already had Vladimir Guerrero Jr. in the organization, for example. So they already knew the talent that they had that they wanted to eventually make space for. So, you know, that was one of the things, right, that sort of bridged the gap between the 2015-2016 seasons and then the teardown and the rebuild being relatively short, because the Blue Jays already had these players in their organization that they knew were going to be their core players that they were going to build around. So, you know, the turnaround time ended up not being very long. But yeah, I mean, as a fan base, you know, sitting and watching this beloved team get dismantled, some players were traded away, some players, you know, were put on waivers, or were, you know, DFA'd. Some players were, you know, just went to free agency and signed elsewhere. Like, there were all sorts of different ways that that roster ended up leaving this team. But I think it was necessary, clearly. And I think there was a plan. There was a clear plan in place. So as much as it hurt, particularly the 2019 season, as much as all of that hurts fans to watch, what they now are experiencing, I think, is going to completely offset that.
Yeah. And I think, let's be honest, I mean, too, is that, you know, the fans that also became, you know, were very enamored with, you know, the former, you know, predecessor of Mark Shapiro, Paul Beeston, for many, many years. He was, you know, a real in the community, you know, for, you know, like very much, you know, for, you know, part of, you know, the fan base, and people felt like they knew Paul Beeston. And Mark Shapiro was Cleveland, you know, a little bit more, you know, standoffish from the fans. But I think if you looked a little bit deeper, like, you know, Paul Shapiro was a baseball guy. Like, he, you know, look what he did in Cleveland, taking a franchise that, you know, was in the gutter into relevance, right? And then, you know, Alex Anthopoulos, of course, very charismatic guy and whatnot. Fans really, you know, really adored him at the end, Canadian. And, you know, Ross Atkins comes in, and it's just a very different style of business. So I think initially maybe the standoffishness of Atkins-Shapiro maybe got fans a little bit out of whack, because obviously they're like, oh, geez, like, the team isn't winning. You know, you're getting rid of all my beloved players. What's going on here? But clearly what's happened during their tenure is they've won the fans over, and they've gone from a team that, do we spend, do we not spend? Because there were some years where in the off season, like, you know, we just could not get with some of those top free agent targets because of the unwillingness to spend from front office and ownership, to right now, where Ryu, Springer, Barrios, Gosman. I mean, the list goes on where we're one of the top players in free agency. So quite the transformation.
Well, Shapiro and Atkins were definitely seen as outsiders when they got here.
Right.
As if they didn't understand sort of the context of the team and what it meant to the fan base. And, you know, they were seen as being small market and not really invested in winning, which I never understood that mentality from fans, because why wouldn't they want to win? It doesn't make sense to suggest that they don't, but, you know, regardless, that was sort of the notion surrounding them. And, you know, they really didn't have anything warm and fuzzy to say to fans, but they were going about their business. And you bring up a really good point, which is that what we've seen the past few off seasons, the signing of Ryu, the signing of George Springer, and now the extension of Jose Barrios, you know, the money is being spent and we can see what talent level they have brought in. So they had a plan and they've executed it. Whether or not fans, you know, enjoyed the process or understood the process, maybe it wasn't clear. I don't know that it was necessarily the front office's job to make it clear exactly what they were doing to fans in terms of the behind the scenes stuff, but we can now clearly see what it was that they were trying to do all along. And, you know, I think one of, and we're going to get into, you know, some of the players that they had inherited and they're leaving and what might have been brought back in return in terms of value. But I think one of the sort of defining moments of the rebuild, if you will, was when Kevin Pillar was traded. Because, you know, he was not the best player on this Blue Jays team, but for a lot of fans, he was a very exciting player. A lot of fans really, really liked him. And when they signed him in January 2019 to a one-year $5.8 million contract to avoid arbitration. And then they traded him April 2nd to the Giants. Do you remember who they got in return for Kevin Pillar? Can you name who they got?
I do not remember. Enlighten me once again.
I think unless you're somebody who's really into trades and, you know, acquisitions, you probably wouldn't remember. They got back Alan Hansen, Derek Law, and a prospect named Juan DePaula.
Wow.
That's who they got back. Hansen was released later that August. Law was non-tendered December. You know, neither one of those players really had much of a major league career. DePaula is still in the Blue Jays organization. In 2021, he played in low A Dunedin. But at the time of the trade, you know, I think that one trade sort of really put the nail in the coffin in terms of, you know, the rebuild is on. The team is being dismantled. Like, it doesn't matter who these players are or what they did for the team or whether or not they're fan favorites, they need to go. And at the time, Ross Atkins said, we're not in a popularity contest. We're in a contest to win championships. That was something that he said regarding the Kevin Pillar trade. You know, and in reality, like, you look at who they got in return for Pillar, they really didn't get anybody. Let's just say that straight up. But what they did get, if you can put a value on this, is that they got younger and cheaper.
Right.
You know, it gave them an opportunity. Trading Kevin Pillar gave them an opportunity to see what they had in Anthony Alford, for example. Now, that didn't work out, but at least they were able to figure out if Anthony Alford was going to be a piece of the future or not. Does that have value? It does. There's no way to put any kind of measurement on it, mind you. You know, but that, I think, is one of the things to sort of look at with all of this, is that, you know, some of these moves maybe didn't bring back anything of value in terms of, you know, F war value or something like that, but they did allow the team at the time to get younger and cheaper and set aside the resources to now be spending money.
Absolutely. And we're going to take a quick break because there's a lot of interesting moves that the Blue Jays, Atkins, Shapiro front office have made during their tenure in Toronto. We're not going to get to all of them, but I think it'd be very interesting to maybe look at some and maybe trace the quote-unquote tree, if you will, the trade tree, if you will, that maybe has led to maybe something that has happened today. Who knows? But we will get back to our conversation in just a moment. But first, let's check in with our friends at DirecTV. I want to tell you what a simple way to get all the entertainment you love without the hassle. DirecTV Stream brings you live TV and on-demand favorites together like never before, which means you can watch your favorite sports, movies, and shows all in one place. And the best part, there's no annual contract. So stop waiting and get your TV together with DirecTV Stream. You can learn more at DirecTV.com. That's DirecTV.com. All right, we're back. Lucas Weiss, MLB analyst Jen Smith. This is the Locked On Blue Jays podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. I want to thank all the listeners who make Locked On Blue Jays your first listen of the day. So I know, Jen, you mentioned 2019, and we're going to get back to 2019 in just a moment. But it's interesting, though, because, I mean, you could argue that the rebuild began starting really in 2017, right? Yes. I mean, that offseason, you know, Encarnacion leaves, signs a 3-year, $60 million contract with Cleveland. The Jays, meanwhile, you know, they signed Kendrys Morales to the 3-year, $33 million deal. Mm-hmm. And then 2 years later, trade Morales, very, you know, similar to when Pillar got traded to the Giants. Morales gets traded to Oakland. I think it was either before opening day of 2019 or on opening day of 2019. It was very close to opening day that Morales got traded. The Blue Jays also signed, you know, during the 2016 offseason, Steve Pierce to a 2-year deal. And then, of course, he gets traded in 2018. It's interesting because, like, when you look back at those moves by the Atkins Shapiro office, front office, I mean, it didn't work.
Right.
But do you think that the fact that they couldn't get Eddie or maybe weren't willing to get Eddie back, or the fact that they signed these two guys to sort of medium length contracts, like, I feel like it was a stepping stone to the major tear up, if you will, and they were just filling pieces in or trying to patch it together. But I think one of the questions the Blue Jays fans would like to ask is, like, what if they just did it a lot earlier? Like the teardown, like, why do they have these sort of, you know, limbo years in 2017, 2018 that felt sort of like a slow kill rather than like an instantaneous blow?
Right. And I don't know if that was, you know, pressure maybe from ownership to keep fans in the seats, perhaps. I have no idea. I mean, if you looked at 2019, and I was covering the team in 2019.
Right.
After they traded Kevin Pillar, I mean, there were weeknights when there were maybe 11,000 people in that stadium.
Yeah.
I mean, it was dismal. It was very, very bleak from that point of view. And, you know, it's entirely possible that just, you know, 2017, 2018 were maybe an attempt to try to keep some fans in the seats, see what they could do with the roster. Maybe it was at the behest of ownership. Like, I have absolutely no idea. I'm just simply speculating. But just judging from, you know, attendance in 2019 and sort of the way things went there, that would just be a guess on my part, right? As to why they didn't just absolutely tear it down. And, you know, to be truthful, you know, 2015, 2016, those playoff runs that this team went on, you don't then tear it all down in 1 year, I don't
sure.
think. Because I don't think, the fan base would not have tolerated that. So, yes, it was a little bit more of a slow death. However, as we mentioned earlier, the rebuild process has not taken this team very long. So it was painful, but not painful for long. And that's the good part. And it's interesting. So you mentioned Edwin Encarnacion. He was offered a qualifying offer at the end of 2016, and he declined that offer. And I don't know what the Blue Jays may have offered him as a free agent. If they offered him, I have absolutely no idea. We know, of course, he signed with Cleveland. So having made him the qualifying offer, the Blue Jays got draft pick compensation in return. And who did they draft with that draft pick? Nate Pearson.
Yeah.
Now,
yes.
We don't know yet exactly what Nate Pearson is going to be. We don't.
But there's buzz. There's a lot of buzz.
Exactly. You know, he's been injured and, you know, clearly has some things to work on. There is possibility still that he could be a starter. We've talked about how incredible it would be if he could be like the Aaron Sanchez bullpen guy.
Yeah.
You know, just coming out and throwing heat at guys and being able to do it for a couple of innings. So we're still not sure exactly what he's going to turn out to be, but he is something right now. And so it's, you know, it is interesting when you sort of start to look at these connections, you know, as painful as it was to lose a fan favorite like Encarnacion, the flip side is Nate Pearson.
And to build on to that, the 2018 season had a couple of interesting trades. I mean, in July, the Blue Jays ended up trading Steve Pearce to the Red Sox. Now, of course, Pearce went on to win the World Series, and the World Series Legend. MVP was said Red Sox, but I digress.
Sure.
But the return, though, was Santiago Espinal, who at this point is the starting third baseman for the Blue Jays. Right, you know, barring any trades in August, the Jays traded Josh Donaldson to Cleveland, and the player named later Jen revealed to be pitching prospect Julian Merriweather. So again, I mean, look, Merriweather had that unreal weekend in April in 2021. Don't know yet what he's going to be. Espinal again has seen glimpses and flashes of brilliance, but again, you know, I would argue right now that the Blue Jays are definitely looking for upgrades at third base, but he's going to be involved in some capacity at that third base spot. So I think when you look back, you know, 3 years later, since those deals were done, I mean, Steve Pearce, you know, flamed out, right? Like, I don't even know, like, Steve Pearce, I don't, you know, I haven't heard his name since 2018. And, you know, Josh Donaldson, I mean, we saw him with, you know, Minnesota, but he's a shell of his former self, right? Since that 2015 MVP season. So I think all, again, you know, trades that needed to be done, getting rid of, you know, older aging players, and, you know, you get young prospects in return.
Well, Steve Pearce is retired now. He retired in 2020, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, he, at the time that he was traded by the Blue Jays, he didn't have a lot of baseball left in him, right? So there's that. Getting Santiago Espinal in return, you know, the thing about Espinal, and I'm going to start drawing some lines here to connect some dots, but you know, Kevin Biggio was supposed to be the starting third baseman in 2021. That did not go well. In stepped Santiago Espinal, and we know that he filled that role better than expected. And the thing about all of this is that having, I mean, I know Biggio was the plan, but having Espinal as that backup is part of what allowed Vlad to move to first. Right?
Right.
And, you know, that comfort level that he demonstrated at first base, I am willing to bet in turn fostered his abilities at the plate, because he didn't have to struggle on defense so much anymore, right? Like, he didn't have to worry about the hot corner.
Right.
He could focus more on the hitting, and we all know what kind of season that he had. So, you know, you make these little connections, and that's obviously not what they were thinking when they traded Steve Pearce and got Espinal back, but it ended up kind of working out nicely.
It certainly did. It certainly did. And, you know, some of these moves, the prospects you get in return, like, you know, you mentioned the Kevin Pillar deal. They don't turn out to much, right? They're sure. Gone quite a way, but some do, and some I think are quite interesting in terms of figuring out, where they go from here. I do want to take a break. We will be back with more of this conversation because there are some more moves and just, you know, things to talk about this front office. But I want to check in with our friends first at Built Bar. This holiday season, grab the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar, even better than a candy bar, Built Bar. Filled with so much holiday goodness, rich with decadent flavor, covered in chocolate, but amazingly low in calories, sugar, net carbs, and fat, and high in protein. You get the best of both worlds, delicious and healthy. So many flavors, you'll have a hard time choosing. Will you have raspberry or mint brownie, cherry or double chocolate, or cookies and cream and peanut butter brownie? Built Bar gives you the extra fuel you need to bust down those mall doors and battle all the holiday shoppers. Now, you may ask yourself, where do you get said Built Bar? Well, you go to Built.com and use your promo code LOCK15. You'll get 15% off your order. Use the promo code LOCK15 for 15% off at Built.com. All right, we're back. Lucas Weiss, MLB analyst Jen Smith. It's the Locked On Blue Jays podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Again, I want to thank all the listeners who make Locked On Blue Jays your first listen of the day. So, Jen, one of the trades that I want to address next in 2019, Marcus Stroman trade. But because I think that this trade, I think, was one of the real, transition points for the front office. Especially when you think about where they are right now. Because I remember when that trade deadline, because they did make some moves, and there was criticism. Like, I would argue that trade deadline was the highest amount of heat on Atkins and Shapiro. Because it was 3 years since they made the playoffs. A dismal season in 2019, as you previously alluded to, with very few people in the stands. And I went to some games and it was very dismal. Very few bright lights that season, except for, of course, the kids coming up, Vlad, Bo, Cavan, etc. But in that deal, they obviously got, they traded Stroman to the Mets for pitching prospects, Anthony Kay, and Simeon Woods Richardson. Now, of course, if you do the trade tree, Simeon Woods Richardson is then, of course, in a bundle along with Austin Martin for Jose Barrios, who, of course, is the Blue Jays' ace going into the 2022 season. So, I mean, look, I feel like it's one of those trades that did a complete 360. The heat at the beginning, but then when you look at where it all ended up and where you look at where, I would argue that, the Blue Jays were, end up pretty well here, given that they get Jose Barrios and have signed him for a long-term contract.
Oh, absolutely. Again, when they made the Stroman trade and got back Kay and Woods Richardson, they didn't necessarily know what value they would have. And of course, trading Simeon Woods Richardson and Austin Martin for Jose Barrios, Martin, I'm sure, was the real trade chip there. But it doesn't matter. It took that package to get it done. So in return, they get Barrios. They sign him to that 7-year, $131 million contract. Stroman, of course, just signed himself a 3-year, $71 million deal with the Cubs. I took a look at their Zips projections for the next 3 years, and I only looked for 3 years since Stroman's contract is for 3 years. And so if you, again, projections are just that, they're projections. Who knows how things will actually roll out. In 2022, 2023, and 2024, all 3 years, Berríos is expected to pitch more innings each year than Stroman, and he is expected to be worth more F4 than Stroman. Whether or not that actually pans out, I have no idea, but the point is that when you come full circle on the Stroman trade, the Blue Jays got themselves, you know, an excellent pitcher who will now be in the rotation for years to come. And the projection suggests that, you know, at least for the next 3 years, he's offering, you know, a fairly high value.
Correct. And I would argue that the 2019 trade deadline, like, that felt like the end of the rebuild to me anyway, in that, or at least felt like the end of, like, the teardown. Like the teardown was done. Now, how long was it going to take to get back up again? And obviously, as we know now, I mean, the 2020 season was condensed. They didn't make the playoffs in that shortened season. But look, I mean, I know that that season gets a lot of, you know, criticism and whatnot. I mean, because of course it was during a pandemic. There were no fans in the stands, all that stuff. But clearly that 2020 season, albeit shortened, signaled to Shapiro and Atkins that this team is ready to compete and contend. Because I don't think they make, the Hyunjin Ryu move post 2019 season. Then of course they don't make the George Springer move after 2020, and then all the trades and moves that have happened since, which we've dissected. So it felt like to me that, you know, that 2019 trade deadline, as much heat as Atkins and Shapiro got, it almost felt like a bit of a necessary evil for them to sort of inherit that and then say, like, well, watch what we're, you know, stay with us, right? Stay, because I remember that was similar language that they were saying, is that, like, you know, if you stick with us, things are going to be good. And, you know, it turned out that here we are, and, you know, the Jays are in a good spot.
Well, here's the balancing act that they performed. You just mentioned how 2019 was the low point, right? It sort of was the, you know, the attendance, the losses, the trade deadline. It was definitely the low point in this rebuild. But 2019 also saw the major league debut of Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
Right.
So that balancing act being sort of the out with the old, in with the new. Your team, as you knew it, is gone, but here's the future right before you. And at least knowing that Vlad and Bo and company had been, you know, were part of this team and were, you know, players could actually see them and watch them play, I think maybe helps quell that just a little bit, just in terms of being able to give that glimpse of the future while the past had been torn down.
I want to end just sort of looking a little bit ahead, because there is still a lot left to be written in the Atkins Shapiro era.
Yep.
Obviously, when we think of trades, and this is an important note to keep in mind, like, when trades happen, it takes a little while to know what happens from those trades, right? I mean, look, I mean, you know, that Espinal, you know, to get Espinal, that was 3 years ago. I mean, we're still figuring that out. We don't know about any of these other trades upcoming, but, you know, that's important to keep in mind. But given what we've seen thus far back in Shapiro, I mean, I think it's cruel, but, like, at the end of the day, it all boils down to winning, sure, right? Because 100%. I'll use the example for the Raptors, right? Masai Ujiri and Bobby Webster could, you know, they're going to, you know, again, try to get back to, you know, where the Raptors once were, contending and whatnot. But if they retire tomorrow, Jen, they are immortalized forever in the city of Toronto and Canada for basketball, for what they did in orchestrating the franchise's first NBA championship. Of course, the Blue Jays have won a couple world championships, 92, 93. But for me, and look, it takes a lot of things to go your way to win a championship. And there's been many years where good teams don't win. But I think when it's all said and done with Atkins and Shapiro, they are going to be judged about whether what they've done with this core are going to win a World Series or not. And if they don't, you know, it may sound harsh for me, but it's a failure, because this is what it is. It's all about winning a championship, right? And look, you can certainly look at some things that, you know, brought the Blue Jays back to relevance, and hopefully we get what we felt in 2015 and 16 as Blue Jays fans and followers and supporters. But I think that, you know, that's the legacy they're trying to write. They're trying to do what Gillick and Beeston did in 92, 93, which has not been done since, which is bringing a world championship back to Toronto.
Absolutely. And that's what they've been selling to fans all along with regards to this rebuild. You know, we're going to win. That is our goal. We have this window of contention. And yeah, I mean, some things are beyond their control. They could not control the fact that George Springer got injured last season and, you know, could not play in a whole bunch of games. And like I said, you know, we can argue that, you know, losing out on the playoffs by one win and how did that happen? And I still maintain that a healthy George Springer would have put them over the edge, right? So, you know, there are so many different things that can go wrong. Even if you make all the right moves, there are so many things that can go wrong. But the one thing that fans will remember is the winning, whether or not the team made the playoffs, whether or not they made the World Series, whether or not they won the World Series. And so, yes, this is, you know, moving forward, like I would argue, of course, that if they don't make the playoffs in 2022, that there's going to be a fairly angry fan base. And I would understand where that's coming from, you know, because this is what the front office has been selling us all along. So, you know, the good news is that they're assembling a talented team and they are spending money. They are doing what they said they would do. Now it's up to them to get the remaining pieces once the CBA has been finalized. And then, of course, it's up to the players to perform on the field.
Well, the last point I'll just make is this. Like, there are teams, Jen, in Major League Baseball that have been undergoing rebuilds for years. Like, oh, years. Goodness. Like, you know, not to pick on the Seattle Mariners, but think about how long it's been for them. Like, early 2000s, right, since they've made the playoffs. And, like, other teams that have just been, you know, just borderline mediocre for years and have been sort of living this purgatory of constant, you know, inching closer, but, you know, taking a couple steps forward, multiple steps back. And that's the thing about baseball. Like, I always say this, like, you know, the windows of contention don't last long, so win now. But I think, again, given those bleak days in 2019, and baseball seasons are long when your team is not doing well, I think it's truly remarkable what has been done to this team to this point where, you know, the young guns are as good as advertised, the front office has made moves, and that has led to fans, you know, rejuvenating their support for the team. And when full capacity, you know, when, you know, the Rogers Center opens up to full capacity in 2022, you know, it's going to be filled. And I hope that, you know, come the summer months, it'll be very much like the 2015 and 16 vibes.
I can't imagine it won't be. It would be absolutely disastrous if that stadium is not filled during those summer months.
Absolutely. Well, it's going to be fascinating. Like I said, really appreciate this mailbag question. I think it was a really fun one to discuss because it has been 5 years, which is hard to believe since Shapiro and Atkins have taken control of the Blue Jays. But again, like I said, a lot more to be written, and hopefully some championship trophies and banners are raised in the Rogers Center. But we don't have time anymore for this episode. But before we let you go, Jen, where can people find you on Twitter?
I can be found at baseball_Jen, and that is Jen with two N's.
MLB analyst Jen Smith. All right, everyone, thank you so much for making Locked On Blue Jays your first listen every day. Now make your second listen Locked On Bets, your daily one-stop shop for all your gambling needs. Locked On Bets is hosted by your boy Q with expert analysis and insight from Lee Sterling. It's free and available on all platforms. Locked On Blue Jays is also free and available on all platforms. So for this episode of Locked On Blue Jays, I'm your co-host, Lucas Weiss. We'll chat again soon.